Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Mem Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins halfway down Daf Mem Vav. If you prefer, you can count 24 lines from the top. We will be continuing with the topic of a divorce that took place because the husband was upset with the fact that his wife had made vows, that she was a vowing type woman. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol neder shiyadu bo rabim lo yachzir. All types of nedarim. All nedarim that were made in public, that kind of vow would result in the woman who's divorced based on vows to be prohibited from being remarried by that husband. He cannot take her back. V'shelo yadu bo rabim, vows that were not in public, that a kind of vow lends its allows the husband Yachzir to take her back if he divorced her on grounds of her having vowed, but the vows were not in public. He can take her back. Omar, we should point out, and we pointed this out in our previous year, that a neder that is a vow that is made in public, basically is a type of vow that cannot be absolved. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, my taima de Rabbi Yehuda. What is the basis of that which Rabbi Yehuda says, namely that a vow that is made in public has no hafar, that it cannot be undone? Answer, dichtiv, there is a pasuk, and the pasuk, say the background for the pasuk in the book of Joshua, Sefer Yoshua, involves the incident with the Givonim. The Givonim appeared at the time that the Jewish people were conquering the land of Israel, Eretz Canaan, and the Almighty had instructed that all of the inhabitants of Eretz Canaan were to be eliminated. These people, the Givonim, were actually residents of Eretz Canaan, but they presented themselves to Yeshua as a foreign people. And they entered a pact, an oath was taken that they would not be hurt. And it was discovered that they, in fact, were locals that came in disguise. And as such, by letter of the law, or the original law would have been that they should have been killed. So the pasuk says, "Velo hikum bnei Yisrael," the Jewish people did not annihilate them. "Ki nishbu lohem nesioi edo," because the heads of the Jewish community swore to them that they would not deal falsely; they wouldn't hurt them. So you see, a shvur was taken, and you would ask, well, couldn't they have reneged on the shvur? Couldn't they have absolved the shvur and continued to annihilate them? The answer is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this was a shvur that was done in public, and as such, it could not be reversed. V'rabbonon, the Rabbonon claim that a shvur that is done in public could be absolved. What is their explanation of the Givonim pasuk? The Rabbonon hasam michala shvua layo klal. In the case of the Givonim with Yehoshua, did the oath take place? Did it get off the ground even? Was there any oath whatsoever? Kevon di Omru Lehu Me'eretz Rechayka Banu Velobo, since they came in subterfuge, they claimed they had come, they were a people from a distant land, and in fact they were not, they were locals. Lo chaylo shvu alayo klal. There was no oath to begin with. The entire oath was based on false pretenses. V'hai delo katlinu. And as far as that which the Jewish army did not eliminate these people, mishum kiddushas Hashem, because of the sanctity of the name of Hashem. What do we mean by that? So Rashi says, Mishum Kedushas Hashem, Shelo Yomru Avdi Kechovim, that Gentiles of the world should not say, Avru Al Shvos, and here the Jewish people violated their oath. Without knowledge of the details, looking at things from the distance, people of the world heard the Jewish people swear not to hurt the Givonim, and if they would see their elimination, so people would say that Jewish people renege on oaths, and that would be a desecration of God's name. So in order to preserve the sanctity of God's name, and which is preserved through the Jewish people, they could not hurt them. Up till now, we've spoken about a shvua, or a neder, that's done berabim, v'kamo rabim. What constitutes a rabim? Rabim is a word meaning the multitudes. What does that mean? Rav Nachman Omar, shloisha. Three. A shvua taken, or a neder taken in front of, an oath made in front of three people. Rav Yitzchak Omar, asora, in front of ten. Rav Nachman Omar, shloisha. How does he come to that? So the Pasuk says in Vayikra, Perek Tezvov, Pasuk Kofhei, we've written part of the Pasuk on the side of the Gemara, it says, V'isho ki yazoiv zoiv domo yomim rabim. The Pasuk refers to a woman experiencing a type of female blood flow. And the Pasuk describes it as yomim rabim. And we know that the Pasuk refers to a woman that experiences 3 days of blood flow. And those are referred to by the Pasuk by the term Yomim equals Beis, equals two. Minimum of Yomim is the plural of the word Yom. So the minimum plural is two. And then there's another word, Rabim, Yomim Rabim. So that's something more than two. Three equals Gimel is three. So you see that the word Rabim, or Neder Shudu B'Rabim, is associated with three. Rabbi Yitzchak Omar Asara, what constitutes a public? So Rav Yitzchak says 10. Dichtiv Arida. The posuk, the word Arida comes from the posuk referring to the spies sent by Moshe Rabbeinu, and in the posuk to scout the land of Israel prior to the Jewish entrance to the land, the posuk describes the group as Arida Ra'a, the evil assembly. And as such, how many evil people were there? Well, there were a total of 12 scouts that were sent, but two of them were known righteous individuals, by Yehoshua and Kolev by name, leaving 10 that equals an Adon, Adon, a community or a public. So, and that was that accounted for 10 people. Rabbi Meir Omer Kol Neder Shitzora Chakiras Chocham Lo Yachzir. We saw in the Mishnah the opinion of Rabbi Meir, and we also saw Rabbi Elazar, who's featured in a brisa immediately following the Gemara. It goes on to say, in other words, immediately following the Dibur Masa, the Gemara goes on and quotes Tanya Rabbi Elazar Omer Lo Osru Tzorech Elo Mitnei She'enu Tzorech. So Rabbi Meir says that the type of neder that would say could cause or that would result in the prohibition of the husband remarrying the wife he divorced is if she had taken nidorim, if she had vowed vows that need chakiras chocham, that namely vows that the husband could not absolve, but and she would require a chocham to absolve it, and that would let's say create fertile ground for the husband to say, had I known that, or to tell us a story, that had I known that her vow could have been absolved by a sage, I would not have divorced her. So we tell a person, listen, if you're going to divorce your wife because of a vow, you should know right now you'll never be allowed to take her back. And with that, the husband, if he divorces her anyway, that would show us that he didn't really care that she had, that there was a solution to the vow, so that the story he would then tell us would have no effect. And of course, I'm based on what we learned in our previous year, not to go over all of the details again, but just to remind you, the problem would have arisen had she remarried, she married a second husband and produced children, and then the first husband would tell us that story, which would have resulted in the avoidance of the get, of the divorce from the first husband, resulting in the children with the second husband becoming mamzerim. Retroactively, we're showing she was never divorced from the first person. And all of that's because of the story he would have told us. But if we preempt that entire scenario from happening by telling him ahead of time, had you known, you should know you'll never be allowed to remarry her, whether or not she marries a second man in the future. And all of this, according to Rabbi Meir, is focused on that kind of neder that would have required a chakiras chacham. A neder, according to Rabbi Meir, that the husband could have absolved. So the husband knows he could have absolved those nedarim. We won't believe his story if he were to tell us, had I known I could have been mefer. Because he would have known that. On the other hand, Rabbi Lezer, he says that the only reason he can't, the first husband cannot take back his wife if her vows were those that were tzorich hakiras chacham, is only because we are really concerned with those vows that don't require hakiras chacham. To put it in other words, if the only concern were vows that require chakiras chacham, Reb Lezer says we wouldn't have prevented the husband from taking her back. B'mai komifligi, the Gemara asks, what's the underlying point of difference or controversy between Rabbi Meir and Reb Lezer? Rabbi Meir Sovar, Rabbi Meir, who held that those nedarim that require chakiras chacham are the kind of nedarim for which we will not allow the husband to take back his wife, because when he tells us the story, had I known that those kind of vows could have been absolved, I certainly would have taken her to a chacham. We believe that because Adam roitze shitizbaze ishto bebeizdin, a husband is all right with the idea. It's fine as far as he's concerned that his wife is subjected to the disparagement of appearing in front of a court, in front of a sage, for the purpose of vow absolution. And as such, since it doesn't, that aspect of the vow absolution, that his wife is subjected to bizoyan, to disparagement, it's an unpleasant experience for a woman to have to stand in front of a court where there's a sage present and explain her whole story of the vow, that itself would not have deterred the husband from having his wife's vow absolved. And therefore, as we said, Rabbi Meir holds that a husband who would tell us that story, he would be believed, and therefore we have to preempt that story, and we do that by telling him, you should know, if you divorce her because of vows, you'll never be able to take her back. Rabbi Elazar Sofar, Ein Adam Reutze Shitizbaze Ishto Bebeizdin. Rabbi Elazar has the opposite point of view. A husband would never have taken his wife to the Chacham for vow absolution because of the indignity that is involved. And therefore, as far as Rabbi Elazar is concerned, if a man would tell us, had I known that a chacham could absolve her vows, I would have taken her, we wouldn't believe that story. And we understand that he would have divorced her anyway. And therefore, there's no danger in a case like that of him messing up her marriage to the second man, to the and children produced therefrom, on the grounds that he would have invalidated the get with that story that I never would have divorced her. Yes, that's not true. You would never have brought her to the chacham. As far as Rabbi Elazar is concerned, the problem comes up with those vows that the husband himself could have absolved and didn't. The Gemara continues. Omar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Maisa Betzidon Vechulei. In the Mishnah, we saw an incident of a man who had vowed, he said koinom, and the word koinom is associated with something to do with a vow, but I don't want to explain it too much yet. I want to let the Gemara develop the problem and the solution. The Mishnah went on to speak about the husband being then allowed, after he vowed something about divorcing his wife, he was allowed to remarry her, and the Mishnah said, "Mitnei tikuna oilam." When we read the Mishnah in our previous year, we pointed out that it didn't seem to fit in with the information in the Mishnah up till that point. The Gemara asks, well, let's read the Dibur HaMasa Amar Rabbi Yossi B'Yehuda Maisa B'Tzidon V'chule, my Tano de Kotoni Maisa. What was stated before regarding vows that the husband made a vow, which is what the Mishnah said, and then the Mishnah told us a story, an incident. Rashi says, "The katoni mais halo enonu asukin of dorm shin dodrahi." Up till this point of the Mishnah, we were dealing with vows that the woman might have taken. What's going on here in the Mishnah that it all of a sudden tells us an incident involving a man having vowed? The Gemara says, "Chisuri mechasra v'achitoni." The Mishnah is actually abbreviated. There are words that are missing by way of understanding. I'm not saying that they're missing by way of text, but as far as the understanding of the Mishnah was abbreviated. V'achitoni, and the following is a new presentation of the Mishnah with the fuller understanding. Bamed v'amurim, when do we rule that the husband cannot take back his wife? Kishinodra he, that is when she had vowed. Avol nodar ihu, if the husband had made vows, yachsir, he can take her back. Rashi adds, Avol nodar hu she yagashen, if he had made a vow to divorce her, and then he divorces her, he can take her back after that. The Omar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Maisa Nami B'Tzidon. There was even a story, an incident in Tzidon. Tzidon is a community north of Israel. Be'echod Sh'omar Le'ishto, a man had said to his wife, Koinom Im Eini Megarshech V'Girsha, and he then divorced her after pronouncing this vow. And the Chachomim allowed the husband to take her back. All of the restrictions that the Mishnah teaches about vows and the prohibition of remarrying her is all with concern of vows she makes. The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. My koinam. In the example we saw, we had the husband saying koinom im eini megarshech. Now the word koinom, on the let's say the initial or superficial understanding of things, is a word indicating someone is sanctifying something to the base of meilush. The word koinom is an alternative expression to the word korban, and as such, what does sacrifices have to do with the man divorcing his wife? So the Gemara answers that we have to understand the story as follows. Omer Avuna Ba'omer, we're discussing a husband that said, Ya'asru Kol peres ha'olam olai im eini megar sheikh. The word konam in the Mishnah was essentially koinam peros olai. Rashi explains koinam peros olai im eini megar sheikh. What does that mean? Koinam peros olai that you see in the Rashi on the second line from the top. It's the man is saying that let the fruits of the world be prohibited upon me as if they were a sacrifice. Sacrifices are prohibited for people to derive personal benefit from. So he's declaring that all the fruits of the world will be prohibited upon him like a sacrifice if I don't divorce you. So one can easily understand that the husband's intention is to create an incentive for him to divorce her. So we're telling you that if he then fulfilled his vow and divorced her, he can take her back. The Gemara continues, Vehitiru lo shiachsi rena, and we were taught in the Tanaic source at the bottom of Omed Aleph, we have a little arrow, and it says in that Tanaic source that the Chachamim allowed him to remarry the wife he divorced. The Gemara asks, Pshita, that's obvious. What's there to worry about? What's the problem? Why should you have thought otherwise? Mahu detema ligzor mishum derbi noson. One might have thought that maybe we shouldn't allow him to take her back, to impose a restriction based on Rabbi Noson's teaching. What does Rabbi Noson say? Desanya, Rabbi Noson Omer Hanoider, one who vows ki ilu bona boma. It's as if he built a personal altar during the time when personal altars were forbidden. The Hamakaimo, and one who fulfills the vow that he made, one might think fulfilling a vow is a good thing to do, but Rabbi Nosson's attitude is, one who fulfills the vow, kilu hikriv oleo korban. We view it as if you then offered a sacrifice on a forbidden altar, which is basically the completion of the sin. And the thinking would have been, had we not been taught otherwise in the Tanaic source, the thinking would have been that here you have a person that he made a vow to divorce his wife and he fulfilled it. Well, that's like offering a sacrifice on a boma. Let us therefore impose a knas on him. Okay, you divorced her, you fulfilled your vow. Now, let it be known, you can't take her back. So the Tanaic source tells us, even though you might have thought such a thing, not so. He is nevertheless allowed to take her back. That's what we mean when we say Komashmlon. The Tanaic source at the bottom of Omed Aleph says that even though you would have thought what we just said, nevertheless, we don't impose a knas and he can take her back. The Mishnah said, Mipnei tikun ha'olam. My tikun ha'olam ika. What's the public welfare that is present in this case? Omer Rav Sheshes Aresha. Rav Sheshes says, you're right. The Mipnei tikun ha'olam is a phrase that appears at the end of the Mishnah, but it's a throwback to the first part. Rashi explains on the fourth line of the narrow lines, Aresha Koi, Dikoma Liel, it had said, the Mishnah said earlier, if he divorced his wife because of her vows, Lo Yachzir. He's not allowed to take her back. Umasi Kocha, and the conclusion of the Mishnah here is telling us, Mnei Tikon Oilam, it's for the public welfare that he not be allowed to take her back. Imishum Kilkula. Either it's because of the otherwise possibility of the first husband's messing up her marriage to the second husband and creating mamzerim, and as a result of our ruling lo yachzir, so we preempted the kilkul from happening, imishum shaloyu prutzos, or we prohibit the remarriage as a means of warning the Benois Yisrael, putting the Jewish women on notice that they should avoid vowing. A second approach, Ravino Amar Li Oilam HaSeifa,
The Hachi Katani, the Mipnei Tikkun Olam phrase has relevance to the end of the Mishnah where he had vowed, and you to understand it as follows. Ein Bezu Mipnei Tikkun Olam. The allowance of the husband after he had vowed to divorce his wife to then take her back afterwards is that allowance is permitted because there is no tikkun ha'olam consideration that should have prevented him from taking her back. And that's what the Mishnah's understanding would be. Ein bezu, in this permission that he has to take her back, is no it is allowed because there is no tikkun olam consideration to dictate otherwise. The Mishnah Hamotzi es ishto mishum aylinis. This Mishnah is a continuation of the previous Mishnah in the sense that a person is divorcing his wife because of some specific consideration. And here, it's because he discovers that she is an islandess. Rashi says, Mishum Ashlo Hikir Bo Kishik Kansa, he didn't recognize, he didn't notice that she was an islandess. Mikomakom Tzicho Getin Olamoy Sivoso Bilaznus Uboa L'Shem Kiddushin. A man married a woman and didn't realize that she would develop into an eyeless. Now, an eyeless is a woman that doesn't physiologically mature in the normal fashion, so that she doesn't. She's incapable of procreation. She doesn't mature. She doesn't develop in the normal process of maturation characteristic of women. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yachzir. If you divorced her because of idleness, you cannot take her back because of the possibility of kilkul, that word that we spent so much time explaining earlier with regard to Nedorim. That problem exists here in Rabbi Yehuda's mind. And v'chacham omrim yachzir, you can take her back, there is no chashash of kilkul. Now, let's take a look at Rashi. How would Kilkul figure in over here? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yachzir. Rashi says, Shema tinasei v'teileid. Where, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we are afraid. If we would allow him to take her back, imagine the following. That after he divorced her based on idleness, based on his discovering or thinking that she's an idleness, she would go and marry another man, Fatalate, and actually bear children with that other man, Viomar, and the first husband would then say, notice we have six lines in quotation marks, he would say, Ilu ha'isi yodeh shekein, had I known that this is the case, afim noisulim mea mona lo isi megarshech, even had they given me 100 mona, a lot of money, I wouldn't have divorced you. Uladas ken girashtil shim yovo loch simonim shachzirech. When I divorced you, I did so with the intent that if you would produce the signs of normal maturation, I would take you back. Vim yodati shelo toshuvi elayin, had I known that you would not be able to come back to me, about real leilad, and you're capable of bearing children, lo gerashtich, I never would have divorced you. Now, if a man would say that, would tell us that story after she married a second man and gave birth to children, that in effect would be a voidance or a nullification of the initial divorce. So her association with the second husband was totally unlawful. Lefikach omrim lo, therefore, to preempt that from happening, omrim lo kaidem gerushin, we tell the man before he divorces her, hevi odea, let it be known, shamotzias ishto mishum aylinis, if you're divorcing her on the grounds of her being an aylinis, lo yachzir olamas, you cannot take her back under any circumstances. Even if she turns out to be a non-aylinis, etc. and so forth, you won't be able to take her back. So once a man hears that, and he divorces her anyway, we're not going to believe the story that he would tell us. and therefore, and they, and would, we will thereby, if he divorces her anyway, the get that he gives is a rock solid get that won't be subject to nullification on the grounds of that story that he would have told us. Rashi goes on, "V'chachomim omrim yachzir delo chayshina lekulkula." He can take back the woman he divorced on the grounds of idleness. We're not going to worry about the everything we saw above in the previous Rashi. Let's go back to the Mishnah. Niseis li'achir v'hoyu lo bonim heimeno. If the idleness in fact marries a second man and produces children, v'hitoivask subosa, and now she comes with a claim that I want a ksuba payment from the first husband. Initially, he divorced her without paying her the ksuba, which is the financial guarantee a woman has upon divorce or becoming a widow. She receives a cash or a financial payment. We call that the ksuba. In the event that the marriage was under false pretenses, so she's not entitled to a ksuba. So when the husband initially divorced the woman that he discovered to be in his mind an islandess, he didn't pay the ksuba. Now it turns out she's not an islandess. She has children with the second husband, and she comes with a claim, I want you to pay me the ksuba. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omer law, Rabbi Yehuda says that we tell her, Shti kusef yofa medibureh. Your silence is more beneficial to you. In other words, forfeit your ksuba claim, because if you press for the ksuba claim, that's going to hurt you more than had you remained silent. Why? Because if she says I want the ksuba, you're just opening up the possibility of him saying, had I known that in the end I would have to pay you the ksuba, I would never have divorced you. And then that would be a new grounds for nullification of the get, and the marriage to the second husband was illegitimate, and children produced from that will turn out to be mamzerim. So it's in her interest to remain silent. As we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a structural note, a mivneh. The volcano shape appears, and it appears in two directions. We note havlotas shitos vehipuchan. We're going to highlight opinions and the opposite thereof. The Gemara opens with a question. Notice we have a long question. And essentially, the essence of the question is to show how these Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim that we met in the Mishnah, appear to be, contradicting themselves based on what they have said in our previous Mishnah regarding Nidorim and Shemra. The Gemara now presents the seeming contradiction. When you read our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda takes into consideration the problem of Kilkul, the mess up, the whole situation of her marrying a second man and then actually producing children with him. That Rabbi Yehuda was, based on that, Rabbi Yehuda said, well, if you divorce her, you tell the first husband, if you divorce her based on idleness, you will not be allowed to take her back. That was a way of preempting the kilkul, the mess up. And the Rabbanan said, no, he can take her back. We're not concerned with that whole story, that possible mess up. Well, but v'holi poshamin on lehu. But we have heard Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim actually stating the opposite, respectively. The Snan. In our previous Mishnah, it said, "Hamoitzias yishto mishum shemra lo yachzir, umishum neder lo yachzir." That's the Rabbanon. If you divorced her because of a bad reputation or because of vows, you're not allowed to take her back. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Neder Sheyodu Bo Rabim Lo Yachzir. Only those vows taken in public is reason for us to prohibit his taking her back. However, V'Shelo Yodu Bo Rabim Yachzir, vows that were not done publicly, the husband is allowed to take her back. So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, he is not, his only concern is vows taken in public are considered pritzus, or considered lewdness or looseness, improper behavior on the part of women, that they vow public vows that cannot be rescinded. So, but the whole story of a man saying regarding non-public vows, had I known that it could have been absolved, I never would have divorced her. That whole thing, that doesn't seem to concern Rabbi Yehuda. That would have been grounds for kilkul, but he doesn't worry about that. On the other hand, the Tanakhama, the first opinion in this source, says if he divorced her because of shame ra or vows, he can't take her back. In both cases, there is the kilkul problem arising. Namely, if the bad reputation turns out to be a falsehood, that she was a fine, upstanding moral wife, the husband could come along with his story about, had I known that she was fine, that there was all a lie, I would never have divorced her. And likewise, had I known that the vows could have been absolved, I never would have divorced her. So we preempt that by telling her, or telling him, Lo Yachs, you will not be allowed to take her back. So the Gemara continues, Alma Rabbonan Chayshi Likulkula, that Rabbonan, the Tanakama there, is concerned with Kilkul, and he preempts that by saying Lo Yachzir, and Rabbi Yehuda Lo Chayesh LeKilkula. Rabbi Yehuda wasn't concerned with Kilkula, as we explained. Rabbi Yehuda was concerned only with Pritzus B'Nedarim, and that applies only to the public kind of Nedarim. Omar Shmuel Epuch. So Shmuel says you have to switch the Shitas around. When we say Epuch, we're referring to the Mishnah of Eilanis. Our Mishnah here, switch it around. The result would be that Rabbi Yehuda is the opinion that is not Choshesh for Kilkul. Just like in the case of Nedorim, where he was the opinion that's not Choshesh for Kilkul. The Gemara asks, are you telling me to switch around his opinion regarding Eilanis? But as you look at the end of the Mishnah, it says, if the woman divorced as on the grounds of idleness, went and married a second husband and had children with him, and she comes with the claim that she deserves her ksuba on the grounds that she never misrepresented herself in the first marriage, and that the husband's claim that she turned out to be something other than a healthy woman is simply not true. She's a healthy woman. She deserves her ksuba, and she claims thusly, Omer Rav Yehuda. And then Rav Yehuda says, Omer La, we tell her, Shtikusech yofa midiburech. It will be better for you to keep quiet. Don't claim your ksuba. That's better for you than speaking up than claiming your ksuba, which will only invite him, the first husband, to null your get on the grounds that had I known I would have to pay the ksuba, I never would have divorced you. Why then is Rabbi Yehuda saying, keep quiet? Michlal de Rabbi Yehuda chayesh l'kukula. He is concerned with the husband messing her up. The Gemara says, well, ha nami epuch. The Seifa, instead of having Rabbi Yehuda teach that, it's the Rabbonon that would teach that. The diamonds, we didn't explain, but you see Shmuel was featured in a diamond, now Abaye is featured in a diamond. They are obviously now coming to resolve the seeming inconsistency or contradiction in the Shitas. Shmuel's approach, therefore, was simply to switch around the Eilanis Mishnah, having Rabbi Yehuda represent the opinion that one is not Choshesh for Kilkul. We continue in the Gemara. Abaye Omerli Olam Lo Tepuch. No need for switching around Shitas. And Rabbi Yehuda basically is worried about Kilkel, as he is presented in the Mishnah dealing with the Eilinus. Well, what about in the case of Nedarim, where he didn't seem to be concerned with Kilkel? For Behuda Behahi, in the case of Nedarim, there isn't any grounds for Kilkel. Why not? Let's just back up for 1 minute. What would have been the grounds for Kilkel? Well, if the husband, let's say, discovers that there was a possibility of the vow being absolved, and he would then come forth with a story that had I known that it could be absolved, I never would have divorced her. So that would have resulted in a nullification of the get that he gave her, and her marriage to the second husband and children was totally illegitimate. So he says, no, the Gemara says, in the case of Nedarim, there isn't any Kilkel that could have resulted. Why? Number one, Savar Lo K'Rebbe Meir. He holds, first of all, like Rebbe Meir. And number two, the Savar Lo K'Rebbe Elazar. And he also, Rebbe Yehuda also holds like Rebbe Elazar. The Gemara explains, Bitzorich, regarding vows that would have needed a sage to absolve, Rebbe Yehuda holds Savar Lo K'Rebbe Elazar. He holds like the opinion of Rebbe Elazar that had said that Ein Adam Roitze Shitizbazda Isha Bebezdin. A man would never have subjected his wife to the disparagement of appearing in front of a court to have her vow absolved by a sage. So that a story that he would tell us, had I known that I could have taken my wife to a sage to have the vow absolved, I would have done so, we would tell him, you never would have done so. You divorced her anyway, because you never would have wanted to subject her to the bizoyon of standing in front of the court to have her vow absolved. And b'she'eino tzorich, regarding vows that don't need the intervention of a chacham, savar lo k'Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Yehuda holds like Rebbe Meir. Eino tzorich is a reference to vows that don't need a chacham to annul. Rather, the husband himself could have annulled. So Rebbe Yehuda holds like Rebbe Meir regarding those vows. There's no kilkel. What would have been the kilkel? The husband would have come forth and say, had I known that I could have absolved those vows, I would have done so and never divorced you. What do you mean, had I known? You, of course you knew. According to Rebbe Meir, a husband doesn't make a mistake on vows that were in his power to absolve. And therefore, he wouldn't be believed to tell us such a story. Had I known that I could have absolved, I would never have divorced you. Let's continue in the Gemara. Omar Rava. Rava, in looking at the discussion we've had till now, he saw how Abaye, he's addressing Abaye, how Abaye resolved what otherwise looked like a stira in Rebbe Yehuda. So Rava says to Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Yehuda, Kashya, Drabona, Drabona, Lo Kashya. You, Abaye, dealt with resolving with what otherwise would have been a contradiction in Rebbe Yehuda. And what about the Rabbanan? Is there not a seeming contradiction in the opinion of the Rabbanan? Ela Oma Rava, Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Yehuda, Lo Kashya, Kiddushaninon. As far as a contradiction in Rebbe Yehuda is concerned, really, there is none as was answered, as Abaye already resolved. That's an acceptable resolution. The Rabbonon ad Rabbonon lo kashya. And as far as the Rabbonon are concerned, there is also no contradiction. What had appeared to be the contradiction? The Rabbonon in the case of Eilinus were not concerned with Kilkel. In the case of Nedarim, they seem to be concerned with Kilkel. So Rava tells us there is no inconsistency in the Rabbanan. Man Chachomim. Who is the Chachomim that say in the case of the Islanus that he's allowed to take her back. The Chachomim is really the sheet of Rebbe Meir. It's the opinion of Rebbe Meir. The Omar Bo'inon Tnai Kofel. The Hocha B'mayaskinon B'delo Kafle Latanoe. Basically, the Rabbonon can represent an opinion that is Choshesh for Kilkel, as we saw their opinion with regard to Nidorim. As far as the case of Eilanus, why is he allowed to take her back if they concern themselves with the possibility of Kilkel? The answer to that is because when he divorced her and, we'll say, stipulated the divorce on the grounds of Eilanus, he didn't state his condition according to the laws that regulate how one makes a binding condition. According to Rebbe Meir, when one adds a stipulation or states a condition in something that he is going to do, it has to be kaful, tnai kaful, a double consideration or double stipulation. What do we mean by double? You have to state the positive and the negative. And there are quite a few other details which we're not going to get into now. Rashi explains, Man Chachomim, the Amri Hocho Yachsi, who are the Chachomim here in the case of the Eilanus that say she can be taken back? Rabbi Meir he, the Omar Seches Kiddushin, called Tnai Sheinu Kofu Ketnai Bnei God of Nei Ruvain, all conditions that are not stated in the double fashion, positive and negative fashion, as was the case in the Chumash with regard to the tribes that remained on the eastern side of the Jordan, the tribes of Gad and Reuven, where Moshe Rabbeinu had, we'll say, made a deal with them, im yavru, im lo yavru, if you cross over into the land of Israel proper and help us in the battle effort, then you get what you want. And if you don't cross over, then you don't get what you want. So you see how the deal with those tribes was stated in the positive and the negative. V'hocha b'delo kafle. Here, with the case of the Eilanus divorce, he didn't double it. Shelo Omar b'shas gerushin elo. All the husband had said at the time of the divorce was, Heve yodas shemishum Eilanus ani motzi'ech. You should know, I'm divorcing you because you are an Eilanus. V'lo Omar lo, and he didn't say, V'him I at Eilanus lo yeheget. And if it turns out that you're not an Eilanus, then the get should not be a get. Dahashto have a get afilu eino Eilanus velo motzi lekalkala. As a result, since the condition was not stated in the proper fashion, the condition is void, and all you're left with is a get that's unqualified, which means that even if it turns out that she's not an Eilanus, the get remains a binding get, and therefore the husband has no grounds on which to mess up her subsequent marriage. The condition that he made is simply irrelevant because he didn't state it in the formal condition fashion, as is dictated by Rebbe Meir. So the Chachomim in our Mishnah represent the opinion of Rebbe Meir. The Mishnah. Hamoicher es atzmoi ves bonov li'oivdei kichovim. A man sells himself and his children to idol worshippers. Ein poiden oisoi. We will not redeem him. Rashi adds, Ein poiden hoil v'rogil b'kakruka b'gemora v'hu shemochar v'shona v'shilesh. The Gemara will tell us that we're dealing with a man that does this regularly. He sells himself to the Gentiles, and he's then redeemed, and again, when you see a person behaving like that, we say he is not to be redeemed. Avol, the Mishnah goes on to say, put him as bonov liachar misas avien. However, we will redeem his children after that father dies. Omar Rav Asi v'shemochar v'shona v'shilesh, as we read in Rashi, Rav Asi tells us the prohibition of redeeming him is as a result of his having done this a few times. Shona is twice, shlish, three times. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice a new marking on the side under our Mivneh heading. The house shape introduces Shnei Maisim Shel Yisraelim Shigil Rishusam Shel Akum V'Rotzu Shiyivdom. Two stories involving Jews that got into the domain, the possession of Gentiles, and they wanted to be redeemed. Hano B'nei Bein Mechsi Diyasvi Zuzi Mi'ovdei Kechavim. There were people from a place called Bein Mechsi that borrowed money from idol worshippers, and they didn't have the means of paying up. Osu Fekogarvulahu. Well, the Gentiles to whom the money was owed came and collected them as slaves. In other words, the Goyim came and captured the borrowers and took them as slaves. Osu Lekameid Rav Huna. And they came to Rav Huna with the request, please redeem us. Omar Luhu Mayavid Luhu. Rav Huna said, what can I do for you? The Snan, the Mishnah says, Hamochir is Atzmo V'yes Bonav Luhu Dikachavim Ein Poydin Oso. One who sells himself and his children to the idol worshippers, he's not to be redeemed. Omar Le Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba says to Rav Huna, Limadetani Rabbeinu, you taught me V'shemocha V'shana V'shilesh. That restriction is only if he's a repeat offender. Omar Leh, so Rav Huna said, my dear Rabbi Abba, Hani Mirgu Regili Di Avdi Hachi. These B'nai Mechsi people do this. This happens regularly where they borrow money, they can't pay up, somehow the others redeem them, they do this again and again. I am not going to redeem them. Ahu Gavro Dezovin Nafshe Le Ludoi was a man that sold himself to a people known as the Ludoi, the Ludi people. Rashi says at the bottom, Uma She'ichlin B'nei Odom, better known to us as cannibals. So there was a man that sold himself to Ludoi. Also the Kamei to Rabami. So he came to Rabami, would you please redeem me? Omar Lei, we continue at the top of Daf Mem Zayin. Pirkin. When the man came to Rabami, he came and said, Omar Le means the man said to Rabami, Pirkan, the top of Mem Zayin Amav, Pirkan, Rashi says, Padeni, redeem me. Omar, so Rabami said, Tanan. It says in the Mishnah, Mamoicher Atzmo es Bonov, Loivdik Chavamein, Poydin Osav, Poydin Osav, Bonim Lachar Mises Aviem. Mishum Kilkula. He says, the Mishnah says that one who sells himself and his children to the Oivdei Kechavim, he is not to be redeemed, but the children are redeemed after their father dies. Why are the children redeemed after the father dies? Because of Kilkul. What does Kilkul mean over here? It means if we don't redeem them, so the children will become assimilated. They'll be absorbed into the Oivdei Kechavim culture, learn their ways. And when their father is alive, Rashi points out, we're not worried about that happening because the father will oversee their development. But after the father dies, we have to take action and redeem them. Why? Because of Kilkul. The Kol Shekein Hocha, the Ika Katla, and all the more so over here, where there's a threat of death. Omru Le Rabbonon Rab Ami Ha Yisrael Mumarhu Dekoch Chazu Le Dekoch Nevelis Atreifus. The rabbis that were present or became aware of Rav Ami's ruling, Rav Ami ruled that he is to be redeemed. And they inform Rav Ami, you know who you're talking about here? You know who this guy is? This guy is a sinner. He's a knowing sinner. A Mumar is just that. And on what basis do they know that he is a sinner? He eats nevelus atrefus. That means unkosher food, unkosher meat. Omar lehu, Rabbami said, well, just because he's a sinner, is that reason for me not to redeem him? Maybe he's eating it because he has great urge to taste ham and pork and bacon and all those forbidden foods that you see him eating. It's out of a desire and lust. It's bad. Of course, he's not able to overcome his drives, but that's not reason to abandon him by the Ludoi. So the Rabbanan said, we've seen this guy sitting in front of two plates of meat, one mutter meat, one kosher meat, and the other forbidden meat. He pushes aside the kosher meat, he avoids the kosher, and he eats specifically the unkosher meat. They taste the same. It's not something that you can explain away by simple lustfulness, but rather, why is he pushing aside the heter and eating the usser? He's doing so out of spite. Omarlay, Sravami says, you hear what they're saying about you? Zeal, you better go. Lo ka shavki li dafrikinach. They're not leaving me. They're not allowing me to redeem you. In other words, because you are a min, Rashi says you are a heretic. Not just a lustful sinner, but a heretic. The Gemara tells us elsewhere in Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Chav Vav Amid Beis that people like that are, when found in a dangerous situation, we do not have to act to save them. And the term used for people like this is Oichel Nevelos Lehachis. You can see this term in Rashi. These are people that will transgress sins simply out of spite. Lehachis literally means to arouse anger. So people whose behavior is like that, they're so out of the camp, so to speak, they're not just sinning because of tivus and drives and lust, but rather to spite the Almighty, we don't have to act in order to spare them of their danger. Reish Lakish Zovin Nafshe Liludoi. Now this sounds very, very surprising. Reish Lakish was one of the greatest Amoroyim Talmudists of all time. And here he is seen selling himself to the cannibals. So Tosfos points out at the top, Reish Lakish Zovin Nafshe Liludoi, Kedem Shechozer Lemuta, the Mistam Loi Mezalze Batzmo Kolkach. Reish Lakish, for those who are familiar with the Gemara in Maseches Bava Metzia, is a person that in the early part of his life had not been immersed in Torah study. He'd not been the great righteous figure that we associate him. So it was probably at that, let's say, early stage of his life that he did this. There's more to say on the topic, but we'll leave it at that, encouraging, of course, to learn Maseches Bava Metzia along with the rest of all of Shas. So Reish Lakish sold himself to the cannibals. But you'll see, he was Reish Lakish was a cunning individual, a scheming character. And the story continues. Shoka Bahadei Chaisa V'Galgalta. Upon selling himself to the Ludoi, to these cannibals, he took with him a bag, and in the bag, Galgalta, there was a stone, and the bag was tied shut with a stone in it. Omar and Reish Lakish figured, Gemiri, it's well known, it's a tradition, Diyum Basra, on a person's last day, called the boy Minayu, anything that he would request of them, of the cannibals who are, of course, licking their chops, waiting for a good meal. He knows it's known that any request, we call that fulfilling the last request, that they do that. They fulfill imminent meal's last request, called the boy minayu, anything you ask of them, avdi lei, they will fulfill. Now, why? What's their interest in fulfilling the victim's last request? Kihechi de lechul adme. That is explained to mean that when a person has his desires filled, so his blood tastes sweeter. That pshat you can see on the side of the Gemara. Pirush kivan she'oisin l'ritzono. Mitmatek, from word mosok, sweet, mitmatek domo, v'yesh len bo tam, and he tastes better. Rashi has a different explanation, but this explanation is rather a conventional, simple type explanation to help us understand the story all the better. So, Yuma Basra, Omulei Mai Nicholoch, on the last day, they asked Reish Lakish, what would you like? What would be pleasant to you? What would you like? Omar Lahu. So he says to them, Bo'ino ak matinchu fi osvinchu. The cholchad minaychu amchi chaisa upalga. Just to make the story a little more, realistic, let's just imagine that the Ludoi place was fenced in with a very high barbed wire fence, and this request isn't going to pose any threat to them. What's the request? He says, I want to tie you up and to seat you down. That's ak mitinchu, is to tie you up. Vosvinchu, sit you down. And each one of you, I'm going to take this bag. And the bag looked quite harmless. The fact that there was a stone in it was not obvious, and I'm going to hit each one of you over the head with this bag 1.5 times. Kamtinu v'osvinu. So they played along. They allowed him to tie them up and seat them down. Kochad minayu. Each one of them, as he took the bag and he bashed them over the head one time, that killed them. That killed each one. Harkine lishine, as the Ludoi was dying, so his teeth were grinding. Type of like a part of the gasping action when a person's life breath departs. So, charkine lishine, there's a grinding of the teeth. Omar Le, Reish Lakish said, Achuchi koma chayches bi. Oh, you're laughing at me. Akati poshloch gabi palga de chaysa. You still have another half a smash over the head left by me. And as I bashed you over the head once, but the deal was 1.5 times. Katlinu kulu, he killed all of them. Nofak v'osa Yosef ka'ochu v'shosi, he left that area, he sat down, and he ate and drank, and Rashi adds here, Yosef v'kochu v'osi kol yomov, he ate and drank all his life, kol ma shohaya mistaker, whatever he profited, he immediately went out and had a good meal. Lo hoya mitzamtzem latznir liyom mochar. He did not save up for the next day. Omro le barte. His daughter, Reish Lakish's daughter, said to him, Lo boyis midi lemizgale. Don't you need something to sleep on? A pillow, a mattress? Omar lo, he told his daughter, BT, my daughter, crazy curry. Literally, my belly. Rashi says, bitni v'shumon shebemei, my belly and my belly fats. Huli karvakesis, I lie on my belly and that's good enough for me. Tosfos points out that it was their way to lie on their stomachs and learn, as is featured in Maseches Zvachim. Tosfos quotes the Gemara, Reish Lakish Rami Amoy, Vumakshi was lying on his belly, and he was raising a question. I might say, a very interesting scenario, an interesting pattern that might come as a surprise to many of us. But that's what we're seeing here. Kinoch Nafshe, when he died, Shava Kova Demuriko, Reish Lakish left over very little by way of an estate. He left over a kavas, a small measure of morika, a certain type of spice. Rashi calls it karkom. Kora anafshe, and he referred, describing himself, v'ozvu l'achirim chelam. That's the spirit of the pasuk is those that leave their bounty, their valuables to others. Reish Lakish was reflecting an opinion that why should I die leaving all of my stuff to someone else? If I have things, I am entitled to benefit from them. Everyone is responsible for themselves. The next generation will earn money just like I earned money, and therefore he, and upon his death, left over very little. It wouldn't be surprising if one would study this particular story on a, we'll call it a deeper level, that the Gemara, as is the case in many, many, many places, has a lot of hints to deeper ideas that are deliberately disguised by the Chazal for their reasons that they know. And therefore, even though we read the story on a superficial level, and it might look a bit a story of on a rather light level, there is, as I said, it's very likely that there are deep secrets in this Gemara, as is the case in many, many other stories in the Shas. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.